always trust you.
We ask the questions.
What is needed in the world?
Is that going to be?
I'm Dorsa Jabari in Vienna. Iran, the UK, France, Germany, Russia, and China have resumed talks in the Austrian capital aiming to revive the 2015 Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or the Iran nuclear deal. The United States is participating indirectly after withdrawing from the agreement 3 years ago. But there's another important party involved in the diplomatic efforts, and that's the International Atomic Energy Agency, or IAEA. As part of the UN, the nuclear watchdog has kept dialogue and negotiations ongoing with all parties involved. But as tensions and disagreements on key issues remain unresolved, what would it take for the negotiations of the JCPOA to succeed? And if they fail, what's next? Stay with us as the Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Rafael Mariano Grossi, talks to Al Jazeera. Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Rafael Mariano Grossi, thank you for talking to Al Jazeera.
My pleasure. Good to see you.
What do you think is the role of the IAEA within the United Nations and also now within the international community?
Well, the IAEA has multiple functions. It is sometimes identified as the nuclear watchdog because we inspect nuclear facilities all over the world to ensure that nuclear material is not diverted for military uses, for hostile uses, and that nuclear weapons are not, you know, developed where they shouldn't be developed. So it has a clear non-proliferation, as it's called in the jargon, non-proliferation activities. But that is not all. We also make sure that all the nuclear facilities in the world, and when I mean nuclear facilities, I also include nuclear power plants, operate safely, operate securely by setting standards, having missions to make sure that these nuclear power plants are okay. But also, on top of that, we have a very important promotional mission when it comes to, for example, nuclear medicine. We've all been, or in our families, touched by cancer, and we know what radiotherapy means. This is nuclear medicine in action, radiotherapy, medical oncology. We also work in water management resources, in the protection of food security, also helping countries now in the pandemic, for example, by using nuclear techniques to identify zoonoses. So there is a whole range of activities above and beyond non-proliferation or nuclear energy that have to do with development. So it's a vast portfolio, as you can see.
Often nuclear power is seen as a threat globally, and now nuclear power for civilian use is not always believed to be the case by some countries. How do you ensure that all sides abide by the rules and conditions set out by your agency?
Well, by and large, nuclear energy is a very safe source of energy and has a very good record in terms of security and safety. There are just a few countries that have decided to discontinue the use of nuclear energy, more specifically after the accident in Japan, in Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant, and some that simply don't use it. The reality is that there are 440 reactors, nuclear reactors, at the moment operating all over the world. More than 50 are being built. So this image that nuclear is something that is either rejected or feared does not correspond to reality. And we, the IAEA, is essential in providing these assurances because we are setting the standards in safety and in security. We also are the depositaries of a number of conventions and arrangements and treaties that have to do with the safety and the security of all these plants.
And that's what I want to talk about, is the Non-Proliferation Treaty of 1968, which came into effect in 1970. How does your organization enforce that treaty specifically and the signatories that are part of that?
Well, indeed, like you say, there's going to be soon a review conference of this very important treaty, the NPT, as it is called. And it is interesting to note that the treaty itself mentions the IAEA, and it mentions the fact that for a country, once a country is a party to the treaty, it must enter into an agreement, what we call, technically speaking, a safeguards agreement. But when we say safeguards, what we mean is that they will subject their facilities, their installations, to our inspections, so we can all have tranquility.
The Non-Proliferation Treaty, or NPT as it's known, was conceived in 1968 and came into effect in 1970. It is an agreement that safeguards countries' nuclear programs. The Iranians have been signatories to the deal even before the revolution of 1979. They say that they have voluntarily been part of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. And this is something that has come up over and over again. They say there are many countries that have nuclear programs that are not part of the NPT. Not only that, the Iranians are part of additional protocols of the Non-Proliferation Treaty as a sign of goodwill in 2015. Once the JCPOA was agreed upon and signed, Iranians agreed to additional protocols under the Non-Proliferation Treaty. And that is something that has not been the case since the U.S. withdrew from the deal in 2018. Now, Iran is a signatory to NPT,
yeah,
and they have been for a long time. And they, as well, were part of the additional protocols which came into effect after the 2015 nuclear deal as part of that agreement. Would you say Iran's nuclear program is one of the most monitored nuclear programs in the world by your agency?
It is. That's a fact. Because by virtue of a number of Security Council resolutions, in particular one that was adopted a few years ago, 2231, it mandated the agency to conduct a number of inspections above the normal type of inspections that any other country would have. The reason is that, of course, in the past there were issues in Iran where all the rules were not being followed, so to speak. So the agency was asked to perform these activities, and it has remained so. So it's a program that is monitored by the agency in many ways.
The talks have resumed here in Vienna.
Yes.
The two main parties that are at odds with one another, the United States and Iran, have new administrations in office. How have the new teams affected the talks? Because you've been in contact with all sides.
Yes.
How are they different, in your opinion, than the previous?
Well, it is no secret that the new government in the Islamic Republic of Iran came to power with very firm ideas and their own ideas about this JCPOA, the return to this agreement of the 2015, which had been more or less left set aside, still there in form but not in substance. But they said that they, of course, wanted to review what had been acted by the previous government, and to join the discussions with the other partners in the JCPOA, which, as you know, include all the five permanent members of the Security Council, Germany, and the coordination of the EU, of the European Union, as a coordinator. And we are the verifying institution, the guarantor, if you want, of the whole thing. So there have been discussions. The IAEA, as I said, is not a party to the agreement, but is the institution that guarantees it. It's the inspector of the agreement. And so we follow these discussions very closely, and we know that there are some complexities about it, which are being dealt with at the moment as we speak. Negotiations are ongoing, and all parties are trying to find a convergence, which is not easy given the sensitivity of the issues at stake.
You've been interacting with Iranians a lot since you took office in 2019.
Yes.
Now, Iran says a new page has been turned. This was in the media very recently. A new page has been turned with your agency. Officials say that there was a delegation that's come to Vienna from Iran's Atomic Energy Organization, and they are going to announce something very soon in coordination with your agency. What have you met them?
We are working. There have been a number of meetings at different levels. I was in Tehran, as you remember, a few days ago. Then I returned. Then I had a meeting with the main nuclear negotiator, Mr. Bagheri Kani, here in my office. And then we have also continued at technical levels, these interactions. This work continues and it hasn't finished yet.
But this team arrived in Vienna from Iran's energy organization with the goal of speaking with your agency and announcing something new in their cooperation with your agency.
I would say that before we agree on anything, the idea of an announcement is perhaps a bit premature. We know that time is running out. We have to finish this very soon, and finish this very soon. The reason behind my affirmation here is that the agency and Iran are trying to come to an agreement on or basically on two things. One is the capability or the ability of the agency to return to one facility, one specific facility in Iran, where we need to reinstall cameras that need to be there. And it has been difficult to do this. So we have been talking about this. And the other thing is how to address a number of issues which need to be clarified. The agency found traces of nuclear material in places that had not been declared before. So quite logically, as inspectors, we have been asking Iran, what is this, why it happened, and we haven't been able to address them satisfactorily. So the idea is now that to have an agreement on that so we can move forward.
Do you trust the Iranians?
Well, you know, I think that it's not a matter of trusting or not trusting. My agency is about verifying. We trust everybody, but we verify everybody at the same time. This is very simple for me.
You've been quoted saying you've been denied indispensable access in Iran. What access is it that you've been denied?
I know. Well, it's what I was just referring to, exactly. The capacity to reinstall our cameras so that the monitoring activity will be more comprehensive.
But Karaj is a workshop. It's technically not a nuclear facility. It's not even part of the 19 different places that you monitor regularly.
True.
Was this part of the extra thing the Iranians agreed to?
Yes, it is. But let me say something. The fact that it's not a nuclear facility is perhaps an accurate description, but it is essential and relevant to the program because it's the place where parts of for the centrifuges, are these machines where you enriched uranium inside. So they are fabricated, if you want, there. So without having an idea of what is going there, what is going on there, we would not be in a position to tell the negotiators of the JCPOA what the situation is, so they can have an idea where they are standing and then put in this agreement the accurate figures in terms of what they want to limit or not. Otherwise, it's impossible.
How long have you had access to Karaj?
Well, the access or the camera monitoring was interrupted in the month of June.
No, but before that, when did you install the cameras?
Well, the cameras have been agreed. They had been there before as part of the JCPOA, but it was agreed that we would continue with these monitoring activities when I visited Tehran in February. At that point, it was very important because we could agree that some additional things were important for Iran and for the agency to continue so that we would be able together to continue providing a level of assurance, if you want, in terms of information, naturally, so that people would be reassured that everything was okay. Then this element started missing. And
well, the Iranians say there was an attack, sabotage.
They say so. And, of course, any attack or any use of violence is of course, unacceptable. But my job is a different job. And, of course, we lament this. We regret this happened. But the important thing, and this is what we have been telling our Iranian counterparts, we need to restore this capability, which is in the interest of everybody.
The issue of compliance is at the core of the problem the Iranians have with the international community when it comes to being transparent about their nuclear program. The Iranians said they've done everything in their power to open up their nuclear facilities to inspectors. There were a number of workshops and facilities outside the nuclear program. Specifically, there is the workshop in Karaj outside of Tehran, which produces centrifuges. That is something that has not been made available, the cameras at that facility, since there was an act of sabotage, as the Iranians called it, in June of this year. They then decided to turn off all of the four cameras that the IAEA had in that facility because they believed that the international community was not strong enough in condemning the attack. Did the UN condemn the act of sabotage?
The UN has been dealing with this in a general manner, but not through a resolution of the Security Council or anywhere else. In any case, it's another institution, not the IAEA.
How does your level of access in Iran compare to other nuclear-powered countries?
Well, I would say, the level of access is irregular. We have places where we are, and we should be there and continue to be there. And at the same time, like in the case of Karaj, there are places where we firmly believe we should be and we are not. So it has good points and areas where we need to improve.
Do you still have access to Parchin?
Well, this is not a place we inspect regularly.
Did you ever inspect Parchin?
It was part of a past activity in terms of our presence for the inspectors, yes.
Nuclear contamination or nuclear traces.
Yeah.
Does it actually mean that nuclear work took place there? Do you inspect every report of nuclear contamination mm-hmm. globally?
Well, yes. Countries declare their activities. They declare their activities. And normally, you only find traces of nuclear material in the places where they declare. The problem in this case was that we found traces of nuclear material in places that had not been previously declared. So the logical thing, before jumping into a conclusion, this is what we do. We have a sequential, very professional work. We put the questions. We say, we found this. What explanation can you give us about this? And we've been, you know, going back and forth on this type of thing.
But it's possible to have contamination somewhere that came from another location, no?
It's not impossible. But again, this is part of an interaction. You get an explanation, so our experts will look at that explanation and see whether it's credible or not.
Do you have all the cameras and detectors at Natanz and Fordo that detect diversion in a timely manner that you need to do your job?
In these places we are able to work.
Okay, so there is no issues in the main enrichment facilities in Iran?
Not at the moment, and I hope there won't be.
U.S. is saying they want to call an emergency session of the Board of Governors of the IAEA before the year's end to discuss Iran's non-compliance or the difficulties that you face doing your job with Iran. Would you support such a move?
Well, I neither support nor condemn. I mean, these are decisions that countries need to make. They, according to their own judgment of the situation, they will decide whether they feel that the Board of Governors should meet again.
And what's the process that will come after that? Will they vote and it goes to the Security Council?
It will depend on the kind of deliberations that the board will have. It could be a simply deliberative session. They may wish to consider a resolution or not. It's really, as a director general, I'm supposed to be, and I am completely neutral on this.
Once then U.S. President Donald Trump withdrew from the nuclear deal in May of 2018, saying it was no longer a good deal for the Americans, then the series of sanctions that followed have been something the Iranians haven't seen for a very long time. The oil sales of Iran were sanctioned, as was the major banking systems in the country, which meant that the international community could no longer purchase oil from what was then OPEC's fourth largest producer of oil in the international community. The Iranians said this is tantamount to economic terrorism, and they started to reduce their commitment to the JCPOA, which was an agreement that took 8 years of diplomacy and 2 years of negotiations, according to then Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif. This was the point the Iranians have now. This is the sticking point. They say they need those sanctions lifted before they will return to full compliance. And under that deal, under the JCPOA, Iran is allowed to enrich up to levels of 3.67%. They are not allowed to have more than 300 kilograms of that enriched uranium inside the country, as well as a certain amount of heavy water. What the deal struck was that the other communities and friends of Iran, like Russia, they were purchasing excess amounts of enriched uranium and heavy water to ensure Iran was in compliance with the JCPOA. It took 10 years, about 10 years, to get the JCPOA signed. And it took the U.S. over a year to get out of it, to decide it's not good for them. What is the timeline now for all the parties involved, in your opinion, to decide if this agreement can be revived or not?
I don't think you have a pre-established dateline or timeline. What I know is what I hear from the protagonists. And for everybody, I think time is running out. You cannot have years of consideration whether you go back to an agreement which was negotiated for many years. It's either you go back to it or not. Now there is good technical work and diplomatic work which is ongoing, and let's see what the final outcome of this is.
What happens if they cannot resolve their issues and the JCPOA is dead? What's next for your agency and your work with Iran?
Well, at that point, we will have to evaluate. Of course, we have a permanent relationship with Iran based on the Comprehensive Safeguards Agreement, which is there. But it is obvious that the program has grown a lot and that activities are taking place in many places, that they are enriching uranium at 60%. They are doing it very fast. So we'll have to sit down with Iran and reassess the situation. But let's not speculate. Let's wait and see if there is an agreement.
Is there a civilian use for that high level of enriched uranium?
Theoretically, there is. But, of course, when you look at, and it's not for me to say you have the right or not, this is also very important. The Treaty on the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons says that countries can have activities in the peaceful realm, provided they subject these activities to inspections in the right way. So it is obvious that when you enrich at 60%, this is a very, very high level. It's very close to weapon-grade level. So my idea is that when you have this level of ambition in terms of your nuclear activities, you must accept also a high degree of inspection.
Do you think Iran could make a nuclear weapon in less than a month?
We don't have any information in this direction, so I wouldn't like to get into language that may be construed as something like that. What we say is that the amounts of material are growing, that this is material at very high level, and of course, this is something that has to be looked at with a lot of care.
Finally, everyone's concerned about Iran and the threat they pose. Can you understand their position and the threat they feel from other countries in the region, Israel? Israel has said recently they're going to rehearse drills to attack the six nuclear facilities. What is your understanding? If there is a strike on a nuclear facility, does that completely get rid of it? Or does it, what are the technical parts of it? Can Israel strike Iran's nuclear sites and that nuclear program will just be stopped?
The Director General of the IAEA, I'm a diplomat, I'm a man of peace. Speculating about the possibility of attacks on nuclear facilities is something that I would prefer not to do. I really hope, and it's not a matter of wishing wishes, I think we have a very hard work to do. Myself, Iran, the JCPOA partners, to provide the necessary stability and calm reflection before anything happens that we will all regret.
Are you speaking to Israeli officials as well as Americans?
I speak to everybody. I speak to all involved countries, and I'm talking to everybody, yes. It's part of my job.
And you're hopeful then for the future?
I must be, and I'm doing everything possible to make sure that, as I just said, that things will continue in a stable way and that we will not go back to the path of violence and war, which doesn't help anybody.
The Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Rafael Mariano Grossi, thank you so much for talking to us.
It was a real pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much.